Today's episode is brought to you by Geico, because Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? And we all know the answer. Of course you would. After all, who doesn't love a great deal, right? And when it comes to great rates on insurance for all the things in your life, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with the homeowner's, condo, or renter's coverage. You could save even more with a special discount when you bundle your coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use Geico mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. And choosing to switch to Geico becomes an easy choice. In fact, how easy is it, Gio?
Well, Chris, it's Geico easy.
It certainly is. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent and get started seeing how much you could save. Hello and welcome to Corolla Classics for July 9th, 2022. We're going to play some highlights of the Adam Carolla Show for you. My name's Chris Loxamana. I'm the executive producer of ACS. And with me, as always, Corolla archivist, super fan Giovanni.
Hey, everybody. Happy Saturday. Happy Saturday, Chris.
Happy Saturday to you, Gio. All right. Before we get going into these clips, I want to remind everybody, if you want to submit a clip request or have a question for us or anything like that, email classics@adamcarolla.com. Or you can find us on Instagram, Google our names, figure out how to get a hold of us, and let us know what clip you want us to play on Corolla Classics. All right. This first clip, we're going to go back to 2014 when Adam would have his childhood BFF, Ray Oldhoffer, on the show. And they came up with a segment that was kind of a spinoff of Ace on the House, where Ray would give building advice because of his construction background and, of course, Adam's carpentry background as well. So we called it Just the Tip, and here's a clip of it.
Adam Carolla Show, 1281. Stephen Bishop not in this portion. Ray Oldhoffer in this portion. Matt Atchie, Allison Rose, and Brian Bishop. This one's from March of 2014. We get a little head on top of the clip where Adam talks about the time Ray smeared poop in his ear. And then we get the Just the Tip segment with also some funny memories that come up as well. Check it out.
Good day, Ray Oldhoffer.
Hello, Adam.
And Allison Rosen.
Hello, Adam Carolla.
And Bob Bryan.
I'm squatting on cunt.
Many requests for that at the hashtag top drop. Everyone's so glad Allison's back.
I'm happy to be back.
Ray's going to do a little tip. The reason in the intro, the cherry with no stone, is Stephen Bishop was the guy who was sitting on the staircase when Belushi and Animal House destroyed his guitar singing that song about I gave my love a cherry that had no stone. It was one of my favorite comedic scenes just out of any movie because of the way he so violently destroys the guitar. You can tell that the actors aren't really acting. They're trying to get the fuck out of the way. And then when he does the sorry move as if he was in a subway car and he stepped on someone's shoelace by mistake when he handed it back to him, the way understated, sorry, the shrug. Yeah.
The best part about the understated, it's a great comedic moment because the whole movie's loud and fast and in your face and boobs and everything. And there's a quiet moment that goes on for a good 90 seconds. And it's very quiet and then a good, great moment at the end.
I also always love the end of the party when everyone was hooking up and in their bedroom and Belushi was just there alone with the mustard jar. And he just dumped it on his chest. Like
as though he was going to take a sip and missed and hit his chest.
But it was almost just like, I'm fucked up. I'm not getting laid. I have nothing to do. I will dump this mustard on my chest.
Speaking of mustard, can we talk about the thing that I just witnessed before the show started, which is Ray said, Adam, come over here. You've got to smell my BO. Mm-hmm. It smells just like a steamed hot dog.
Yeah.
And you agreed.
Who bucked up? Yeah.
It smelled like a steamed hot dog.
See?
I have said it many times. If you ever spend any time in a locker room, you go, you'll walk into the locker room and you'll go, somebody has a pepperoni calzone in here.
And someone has caramelized onions.
And then you turn around and there's some brother standing up on the bench because he doesn't want to get athlete's foot. And he's taking his jock down and you go, oh, I'm smelling sack. Back sack from a running back. Like you're well,
yeah, it's weird how delicious food and bad body funk are not that different.
I am telling you, you could get the plume of steam that comes off my favorite Carney's hot dog and have it come out of Ray's undershirt, and I would gross out. But if I was at Carney's, it would have a context, and then vice versa.
Yeah, your mouth's watering.
Yeah. Ray and I have always had this agreement, you know, that if something is funky, the other one has to smell it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Take your shoes off.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I remember one time one of my good friends was in the bathroom, and he yelled, "Oh, Allison, I wish you were a guy so I could show you what just came out of me." And I was a little bit sad that I wasn't going to get to see it. He flushed before I had a chance.
My mother found my poop once.
My dad found your poop, Ray.
Who hasn't?
My dad found your poop inside of my bedroom door on the floor.
No, not on the floor. On the newspaper. I laid down a few sheets of newspaper.
Trained.
Come on. I didn't make it easy to clean up.
My poor dad, he walked into my room and there's a human who had defecated inside of the room just on the floor. And he just showed
Welcome home.
Just gave me the, what the fuck?
What's the best case scenario in that sense? If you're the dad, you're like, I hope my son did not do that.
Thank God my dad and I never spoke about anything because we would have had a lot of uncomfortable conversations. I don't think, Ray, you would know because you know my dad well. I don't feel like he was Mr. Popularity in high school.
No, I think he was rather
fat kid who played the trumpet.
Yeah, and scared.
Yes. Okay. I don't think he had a ton of friends.
Maybe one, maybe a half.
He didn't play. Yeah, no he didn't.
Sports,
he
no
didn't
nothing.
Play sports. He didn't do anything. So when his son started hanging around with people that would take whole sacks of gold medal flour and throw them into a patent fan that was on high, just like an industrial fan inside my room, and just poof, white out inside the roof or the inside the room, or just completely urinate all over my mattress. Or defecate on the floor, or try to drag me out of the house naked while we fought in the driveway.
And was actually really wonderful. That was that was one of your stellar moments, I have to say. I mean, you went fucking batshit. He went Hulk. Ace went Hulk that day. We had him outside, too.
When you're naked.
And we were laughing, and you're getting beat up when you're laughing. It's tough.
When you live across the street from the school, and there's 3,500 kids that go to school, and everyone is filing out into the street, and you live across the street, and you're nude, and two of the strongest guys you know are going to drag you out into the street and basically throw you out onto the sidewalk naked in front of your entire school, you get the strength of 10. Absolutely.
I would have loved to like chain him to the gate or something. That was my vision. Didn't work out.
Yeah, almost everything we did. I remember there was some poor kid. We stripped him down on the baseball field and lit his underpants on fire, I think.
Well, they were on or off him.
We stripped him down.
Either or.
We're not animals.
Who was that kid?
Who wasn't? I mean, Ray, do you remember when you used to lock people in the cage and then Chris would get up on the locker and whiz on everyone's head.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice, right? Yeah.
It was funny.
By the way, this is why no stories, no matter how sick, twisted, sexually perverted, or physically repulsive, sound like anything to me. Like when somebody says, oh, this guy came up behind him and spit on his back or slapped him across the face or grabbed his underpants, gave him a wedgie, or even the teabagging and all the bizarre sexual ritualistic hazing kind of shit sounds like fucking Tuesday to me. It's like nothing.
I remember I peed on McGraw in football. I peed right on him. And he looked at me and he go, dude. And he walked away.
Effing stupid?
Just walked away.
People don't have a big...
dude.
People don't react the way you think they are going to react to things that seem insane.
Kill you.
I've seen Ray pee on strangers. Strangers.
That was like 45 years ago.
All right. But remember that chick you just met that night and you farted on her face? And she just looked at me and she goes, I don't even know you. I remember laughing because I thought, like, if you guys got together for a couple of weeks down the road, then he couldn't fart on your face?
That's appropriate.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
You got to start off on third base.
That's
third
right.
Third base. That was our third base. Mm. Did you get the third?
Sure did.
But as my dad. Anyway, back to poor Jim.
God, what's home?
Jim Carolla, who didn't have any friends, and grew up in South Philly with a you know, belly, a trumpet, and a dream. All this bizarre shit with my stupid buddies coming over and wrecking my room and throwing people around naked and defecating everywhere and pissing on everything. Must have been a lot of confusion from his, you know, black and white 50s Bowery Boys kind of South Philly growing up to this weird, bizarre, sexually macabre era he'd entered into in the early 80s.
And the bizarre part of it, we were all big dudes. There was not one small one out of a bunch, you know. I mean, except for the peripheral players like you know, Rotto or whatever.
Yeah.
But
always
for the
good
most
for you
part.
To use everyone's last name. Yeah. Never refer to him by his first name.
Should I say his first name now, then? We can close it up.
He doesn't care, but, you know, the story's been told before after buying Ray a double bacon cheese or whatever burger.
It was either In-N-Out or Fatburger.
It was Fatburger. It was like, it always reminded me of that scene from Slapshot when the Hanson brothers were pounding on the other guy's head and the ref was like, "You out!" And he like popped his head up as he was like mid-punch and he was like, "What for?" Like incensed.
Yeah.
Poor Alex was driving his four-door VW Rabbit and ready to start pissing on him after the guy bought him lunch.
He made me fucking walk home.
Fucking fine. How do you do?
The nerve.
And when he pulled over and yelled at Ray to get out of his car, Ray's like, "What for?" I was like, "Look, Ray, I'm used to opening my bedroom door and seeing where you've defecated, but even I understand what for."
Pick your battles.
If you were just driving along and somebody started urinating on you as you were driving, and then they pulled over and flung the door open and yelled, "Get out," would you say, "What for?" I mean, you might argue your case, but what for? Anyway.
Wasn't Ray, part of it?
Ray was incensed. That's what I love. Ray
don't
was
give
incensed.
An inch.
Ray was indignant that he had to get out of the car.
It wasn't so much that. It was the mile and a half walk. Think about it.
Yeah, you were striking distance of your mom's apartment. Yeah, it's probably about seven blocks. But the point is Ray got out of the car and was like, "Oh, well, okay. Well, now I see your true colors."
You know, no, it was nothing like
that. So that's how you treat friends.
I was just trying to. Bought me lunch the next day.
Ray, remember when you got thrown out of another car on Ventura Boulevard and then beat us all home in a car?
Yeah.
I was impressed by
good.
That.
Yeah, I got a hitched ride or something.
Yeah, Ray.
I remember jumping out of my ex-girlfriend's mother's Rolls Royce and then getting picked up within 40 seconds by a dude.
It's a metaphor for your life.
It's not often that you throw a guy out of a car, you know, like 12 miles from where he lives, and then he beats you to the house and you just go on driving. Yeah. That's pretty tough to do.
You didn't make it a detour?
Nope.
Pit stop.
It's like science fiction, actually.
It really is. Yeah. Like you built
Wrinkle in Time.
Machine.
What was that book?
Wrinkle in Time.
Space travel. I don't know. Space travel. Whatever.
All right. Good reference there, right? Anyway,
I forget the magic coat, whatever it's called. James and whatever.
The giant
Technicolor.
I don't know what you're talking
Dream
about.
Coat?
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh right. Stephen Bishop, as I said. Play a song or two of his that you may remember from back in the day. He's going to come in here and do a little playing. Talked about not only Animal House, but Blues Brothers as well. One of the cops down in the car.
You'd know best of the guy when ended up upside down after the ball chase. You know, they're hitting the ball. He goes, "Hey, my watch." It's a great little moment in those kinds of movies.
I love that movie. I love that whole mall scene. I love the part where he's when he just comments, "This mall's got everything.
A lot of space in this mall."
This mall's got everything. And then that the new Olds are in, I don't know if it's Oldsmobile or Pontiacs or whatever.
I think it's like in early
they're
this
in
year.
Early this year. Was his comment.
"You got us into this mall, buddy. Get us out from this parking lot."
I love that. Love that scene. All right. We'll play you nominated for Academy Award.
Do you want to hear something from him?
Yeah. Let's hear
what
a little.
What do you want to hear?
Let's hear a little "On and On." I think that's his biggest hit.
Down in Jamaica, they got lots of pretty women.
steal your money, then they break your heart. Lonesome Sue, she's in love with old Sam. Take him from the fire into the frying pan. On and on, she just keeps on trying. And she smiles.
I'll go for a little
like
It Might Be You from Tootsie. Or Tootie, as Gary calls it.
That's insulting to both of us.
That's right.
Tootie.
Like this song. I will tell you that I went out to lunch on Sunday with the family and I got an important revelation. I'll keep
talking.
Good revelatory
music.
Yeah. Oh,
it's fitting.
Sitting there watching the kids eat the bacon and the pancakes. The place was packed. Watching the mother and the adult.
Her name's Lynette.
Oh, yeah. That's right, her.
That's Paula.
A couple tables down. His mother's probably 57, 60. Son, Down syndrome, clearly, probably 28, 30, 32. And they were eating, and she was on her second glass of Chardonnay. Head on a swivel, as I always say. Always checking out my environment. Let's listen a little, Steven. All right, you go. So I was just sitting there, and I was watching Mama on a second glass of Chardonnay. I don't judge, you know.
Did you say this was breakfast time?
Sunday, brunchy,
Sunday fun day.
Fun day, yeah. Well, for us, so breakfast about 1:30 or 2 in the afternoon.
Second glass within what kind of time span?
She wasn't guzzling it down, but she was catching a nice while the sun is up buzz, which I can appreciate. And then I was looking over at the guy with the Down syndrome, and I thought, where's his drink? And then I thought, I've never seen a guy with Down syndrome drink. I've never seen anyone with any form of anything drink, any form of retardation whatsoever, or whatever we're calling it today. I've never seen a guy, a Down syndrome guy, with a beer in his hand. And I thought, that'd be my number one thing if I had Down syndrome. You know, it's not like he's got to do a big presentation at JPL tomorrow morning. He needs to be focused or anything.
Yeah. Not a lot of whispers either. Is he drunk?
It's just, yeah. Why not drink? I mean, or
maybe
at least
he's got to drive.
I don't think so. I feel like she was driving, and I just feel like I've seen the Down syndrome guys do everything but drink.
Fuck yeah. When life gives you lemons, turn them into lemon drops.
Right, or at least Mike's hard lemonade.
That's right, either way.
Beer?
Why not have a cocktail as a dude with Down syndrome? And I was talking to Drew about this, and Dr. Drew, this was a little bit of a revelation for him, too, because he's like, I've treated hundreds of thousands of people, never anybody with any kind of affliction in this manner. And I was like, I know. It's never happened. And so I was giving him my yummy face theory that, chronologically, you may be 33, but if you're a nine-year-old emotionally, you want soda pop. Nobody wants a Mickey's Big Mouth when they're nine. It tastes like shit. Scotch, brandy, even the white wine tastes like hell.
New target market for Mangria.
Ooh, nummy, nummy, nummy. And look, it's not like you're operating a crane or a backhoe. You're not a fireman. You know what I mean?
You're hardly ever even alone.
Yeah, just chill out. There's always a designated driver and have a little Mangria.
Yeah, spotter.
Get on the short bus.
So I said, I was just looking at him the whole time and I was thinking, and I was talking to Dr. Drew about it. And Dr. Drew had a couple of, he liked my yummy face theory. He was also, it's funny to talk about a guy who's seen everything and him go, hey, never thought about that. And then he said, I believe, and Gary Haftar, you can back me up on this, but he said their centers where they process the pain, probably not like ours.
Just going to say, but the pleasure center isn't developed. The stuff that says the alcohol is great for me or I'm enjoying this or whatever.
Well, also that I need a drink after this day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that a long day of what? I need a drink. You know, we all have that feeling of, oh, God, I could use a beer after this, you know, or whatever this is, you know.
Usually when, for me, it's a beer.
For me, it would be this.
Yeah. For me, when I walk off that stage or I'm on the stage or I'm walking onto the stage, yeah. That's when I...
Pre, post, or during stage
time. No, there's a...
But yeah, we didn't have those thoughts as children.
No, you didn't have that. But when I go do one of those vintage car races, when I climb out of the car, I want a fucking beer badly. I just want a beer. I just want it bad.
Like way before water, anything else?
Yes, like you just I'm not want a thirsty. Beer. I've just been stressed out for 20 minutes. Not stressed out in a bad way, but I've been beaked up. I've been on edge, and I just want to knock myself down with just a frosty one. And... He thinks that part of the brain is not really... And so then we started talking about what is happiness. And, you know, we do this thing where we feel sorry for that guy all the time. But should we really feel sorry for that guy all the time? And maybe we should feel a little more sorry for Dr. Drew. You don't feel sorry for Dr. Drew, but Dr. Drew is the one who's going insane. That guy's not.
Yeah, you don't feel sorry for people that appear very capable.
And whatever.
It's a degree of consciousness.
But and know? Are being living a very capable, yet very stressful, sometimes confusing, sometimes humiliating with, you know, pits, you know, peaks and valleys, kind of a life, you know. And then I thought, we do that thing all the time, and maybe we're doing it more and more. And you guys tell me this. This part where we associate everything with happiness, like we go, well, there's the one percenter, but then there's the 99%er. Those people, what? You know what I mean? Maybe they're happy. I they seem to be happier than a lot of the one percenters. I know a lot of
how would you know?
the guys I know that seem to have life by the tail don't seem that happy just day in and day out. Now they go on vacations and they go, you know, they do things that are a little more.
Extravagant.
Yeah, and Drew always says you'll always hit your means. Like you're not supposed to peak, you're not supposed to valley. You're just supposed to we'll all hit whatever we are. Allison, you with a whatever in your bank account and whatever house on the hill, you would get a momentary rise and then you'd go back to wherever you are. And I don't mean
that.
Miserable.
No, but this means no, but to, it's like
I got to suffer low grade depression my whole life. Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, don't we do too around you?
But I mean, that's that thing that I was talking about yesterday is that chasm between visually my wedding was perfect, and yet inside I didn't feel like I'm having a perfect moment.
You hit your means, you know. And Drew was saying that's what we do, and I said it's same. It's how a lot of his customers get up to 100 Vicodin a day. You go. How the fuck could you eat 100 Vicodin
how can
a day?
Even function on
and
that.
And function. Well, it's pretty simple. You start with one, and then your body starts to find that equilibrium. It's trying to even itself out all the time. So you do two, and then you do three, and then eventually you're eating 100 to be kind of even. So there's an emotional happiness, evenness kind of thing where.
And then you meet people who have a great attitude, and you look at their life, and you think, why?
Right.
Because they're on 100 Vicodin a day.
That's right. With Down syndrome. Mm. But what I'm saying is, I don't think it's a good thing for us to keep deciding that other people must be miserable all the time because they drive a Camry and I drive a Mercedes. They could easily be happier than us. And then I think there's been times in my life when I was completely poor and completely happy. Like I didn't feel security. I always felt a little insecure, like, oh, boy, I don't have car insurance, you know. But I was certainly no less happy than I am now
what
in
do
a
you
general
consider your norm,
hapometer. My problem is I don't really focus on happy. I focus on accomplishment and satisfaction. So, unfortunately, my happy-o-meter, I step over most of the time and focus on how's this going, how's that going. What would you get done?
Do you think you're doing that so you can avoid that? I mean, you think you're keeping busy for the sake of keeping busy so you don't have to look at something else?
Maybe. I don't.
Maybe Ray projecting on Adam?
Could be. It's better than slamming shit in Adam's ear.
Well, hold on.
It's kind of projecting on you.
Day's not over.
Was that your shit, Ray, or was that somebody else's?
It doesn't matter. Does it fucking matter?
My point is this. We are who we are. the guy with the Down syndrome has Down syndrome. We feel horrible because we go, oh man, if I had Down syndrome, I'd be horrible. You wouldn't. You'd go back to wherever you are, or were yesterday. At some point, it would equal out. Brian's got a brain tumor.
What?
His demeanor has not changed visibly, at least to me. 2.5. Now, I'll give you a couple of weeks to absorb this horrible, possibly life-ending scourge.
Life-changing, for sure, either way.
Well, at the beginning, it could have been life-ending. Yeah, yeah. And then at a certain point, we figured out, well, it's going to be life-changing, but might not be life-ending. He's exactly the same. So if he can do that.
But, Brian, do you have more appreciation? Do you feel more present now and grateful?
I do have, to answer your question in two parts, I do feel more appreciation sometimes for little things. Like, it's nice. It was nice to be able to worry about little things I've said on the show before. Like, you know, oh, the mailman didn't take my letter like he was supposed to. Like, not to worry about big things like, am I going to live to see my next birthday or whatever. So it was nice to appreciate the little stupid things again. But I always felt, I don't know, I guess it's just a nature versus nurture thing. I always felt kind of just present, and I never really had trouble living in the moment.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a bad answer.
Yeah.
No, it's just you are who you are. Your happiness is kind of set. You should attempt to not make other people unhappy, and you should attempt to be happy yourself. But adding a flat panel TV to your den is not going to change that. And if it does, it'll be temporary. And then we'll go down to my Vicodin thing. And sitting around looking at people. A couple that has to share a car because they both can't afford their own car and going, they must be miserable. They are who they are as well. And it's, in a weird way, very elitist and sort of condescending to just look at anyone who has less than you and go, they're getting less out of their life than I am. They have kids. They love their kids. They're coaching their kids' basketball team. They love their kids. They have a TV. Yeah, they're getting fingerprinted to coach. They have their team. How about that fucking guy loves the shit out of his team? He's fucking Ravens, Baltimore Ravens fan. He's a fucking fanatic. Like, I think he's enjoying that more than I am.
I think I feel sorry for him.
How about this theory as it pertains to the happiness of the 1%, maybe the 99%? The 1% are, I would imagine, are achievers. That's how they overachievers, or they're constantly consumed with achieving, or it's never enough. That's how they got to the 1%, perhaps. Mm-hmm. So maybe no matter how much they have, they'll never be as happy as the people who are like, I'm very happy. I got everything I need, and I'm cruising along. I got a great life, great wife, whatever it is.
No, it's true. It's bottomless because it's on to the next thing.
Yeah, Adam, how long have you been on your hustle now? I mean,
they have a hamper with the bottom sawed out.
You're on year 20 what of this?
No, I only really started getting on my hustle when I lost my radio job, and then I had this horrible, like, I don't have a contract, you know, feeling of insecurity, family, and all, you know, new kids, newborn, not newborns, but, you know, two-year-old twins, and a house, and a family, and a wife that, you know, if push came to shove, could bring home the bacos. Not the bacon.
And hey, you know what I'm thinking too, Ace? That the Down syndrome kid, give him some beer, might be happy.
Normal. I sort of like to experience that.
The normal thing. He kicks in and just breaks into conversation.
I'd like to check that out.
Ooh. All right. Gentlemen, grab your hardwood. It's time for Just the Tip.
Just the Tip.
You know I hate that, though.
Right? I know.
Okay. All right.
That's a porcelain punisher and his old lady.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Thank God they're moving in together.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be great.
Boom.
This segment is sponsored by MaximaStyle.com. For best selection on energy-saving LED light bulbs like the ones we use here, and why Adam's looking so good right now.
Mm-hmm.
In our studio right here, visit MaximaStyle.com. So here's the tip, Ace.
Mm-hmm.
Hanging a, let's say, 50-pound picture.
Big picture.
Huge. Lead frame, whatever you got, or just anything.
Mm-hmm.
Easy anchor, whatever. You're going to have to drill through your drywall or whatever it may
Hold
be.
Hold on. Let me say something to Bald Brian over there because we got a little electrical panel problem. Bald Brian, why don't you crack the door and put the fan in it and get a little cool air blowing in the studio. Just a round fan. Just let it close on it. Thank you. Okay. Get a little cold air coming in here. Sorry, go ahead, Ryan.
Brian, you want to smell this?
Big, smells like hot dogs.
Smells like a steamed hot dog. So, you're hanging a picture, whatever you're hanging.
Maybe I would like to smell your pit.
Do you want to give a shot?
After the segment, maybe.
All right, we'll see. So, you're hanging a picture. Anyway, you're using your screw gun, whatever you got. You're drilling a quarter-inch hole, right?
Yeah.
You know it's going to make a mess. You're going to get some.
You're going to get all that dust and
everything.
You're
going to get dust everywhere, all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Hey, you want to see your perfect dust catcher?
You're drilling a hole into a wall. You're putting a screw in a wall, whatever it is.
Whatever you're doing.
And all that plaster is going to come drizzling down.
It is. Mm-hmm. So what you do is you take a Post-it, you fold it in half, stick it where the hole is.
Yeah, you taco that Post-it.
There you go.
You make the V out of the Post-it, and you stick it on under there, and then just drill that hole.
And it catches. See there?
Yeah.
Anybody can do it.
I like that, Ray.
You do.
That's just a tip. Tip. Nice job for once.
Hey, and thank you. Mm. What?
Huh?
Why has it got to be that way? Come
you
here.
Said,
I got some,
nice job.
I got some poop for your ear. Anyway, thanks
you
to
say?
Max.
Hey, my left ear.
Thanks to Max Mustafa.
Right. What if you ruptured my eardrum with that poop?
I would
back
have loved
day?
It all the more that some doctor would have been digging in your ear, going, or it got infected. I would have been elated. No, I wouldn't have been. Mm-hmm. I would have felt badly.
Okay.
For a minute.
All right.
Use the code Adam for additional savings. Thank you, Maxima, very much.
Thanks for the tip.
Yeah, good call, right?
That is a really good tip because I have crumbly wall dust all over the carpet. I mean, not from even hanging a heavy thing, just from like putting a tack in.
I would tell you people that for 200 years, the only thing you could do to hang that diploma up on the wall was put a nail in that common head nail. Now there's 1,001 devices, some adhesive, some have little push pins you put your thumb in.
Wait, did you say diploma?
Not me or you.
No, I got
talking
my
about
diploma.
Other folks. You got your diploma?
Yes.
Right, just because I never stop being amused by this. Your senior year, how many potential days could you have won if you'd never missed a day your senior year of high school?
There's 100.
The potential. The,
if you had perfect attendance.
That's what I've clearly said.
176.
176.
Yeah.
That's your senior year.
176.
You missed out of your senior year.
118.
118. And still graduated.
Wow.
Yes.
North Hollywood High, everybody.
Yeah. Nailed it.
Nailed it. That's right. But used the little Post-it
with,
there so it wouldn't make a mess.
Honors.
No. Fucking honors. That's North Hollywood High, everybody.
I'd say that's harder than graduating with honors.
It was. I was on my hustle.
Mm-hmm. I believe, you know, there's the award for the oftentimes Asian kid who has the perfect attendance.
Sometimes he's Asian, sometimes he's South Asian.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's some range in there. Ray, you should have got some sort of award for being able to pull that off.
Agreed.
You know what I mean? Like in baseball, the guy struck out the most times or the pitchers walked the most batters. In a way, it's a weird feather in your dunce cap.
Yeah, they say you have to be a great pitcher to lose 20 games.
Yeah.
Wait, how often were you absent? Close to me.
Senior year?
No, you were around because you were playing football. First semester, you had to be there.
I missed quite a few days, but not 118.
Do you think about 40? 50?
You don't get, my policy was I show up, I just don't do anything. Like airport security. You know what I mean? I needed a paycheck, I just didn't want to work for it. You know what I mean? So I was there, not doing anything.
But half the time, we would leave. We would leave at nutrition, we would leave at lunch.
Were you guys writing your own notes? Is that how you left? Or were you just taking
walk
off?
Out?
No.
I mean, we had been stopped before, too. And
no, I got suspended when I walked out.
You
when
did?
I stopped. Yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah. That's where poor Mr. Tomey had to pull my fucking emergency card, which I filled out 3 years earlier,
fantastic.
Jacking off in line. Had that stupid fucking emergency card. You're supposed to take your emergency card home to have your parents sign it because, you know.
Yellow 4x6.
Yeah, if you get hit in the groin with a utility ball and rupture something, they need to know, like, where your dad is at work or whatever. But it was always take it home, fill it out, and then come back for registration. Registration day at North Hollywood High were, like, you know,
it's like a half day.
It's like 10th, 11th, and 12th graders all in a line of about 500 people.
Was it in the gym?
It was heading into the auditorium. Yeah. And you had to get there. I couldn't fill things out, so it was difficult for me to fill those cards out and, like, get my classes. I always just got rid of the pan drippings, whatever was left over at the end of things. I couldn't, you know. But it was a lot of, like, you got to take Mr. So-and-so for so-and-so because he's a cool math teacher, he's a cool English teacher, whatever it is.
You only got your choice of teachers. We only got our choice of teachers the first semester because we played football, so you'd get to register first.
Oh, right. Now, Ray, the second semester, or the second part, when it was starting to get warm, and the beach beckoned. I remember very clearly Mr. Smith, who was a dick. Ray did his move where Ray, and probably, this would have been a time in your life where you probably should have just stopped and reevaluated things, or at least one of the many times. Ray walked to the front of the line and just did his thing. You know, he just walked to the front of 500 people, slid in, and went announced he was going first. Now, everyone else had been waiting for 2 hours, you know. And Mr. Smith, who was a dick, looked at him and was like, "Old Hoffer, get back here. Get back here." And he's like, pulled Ray out of line. And he was like, "All right, Wiseacre, back the line now. Back
to
the line.
You don't get to register with O. You're going to have to register with Z or whatever the pull was.
You're just going to the back of the line." And Ray said, "Screw it. I'm going to the beach." And I remember Mr. Smith, and here's where this would have been.
Now, he wrote on my card to register last.
This would have been one of those moments where you probably should have stopped yourself in hindsight. But Ray said, "I'm going to the beach." And Mr. Smith laughed. And he said, "You go to the beach, you're not going to get any of the classes you want." And Ray just looked at him and he said, "We'll see." And he went to the beach.
Now, I took my card, I put it in his pocket.
All right, and he left.
And then I left, and then I told him, "I have Mr. Hansen. He'll do anything I want."
Again, this is a moment you probably should have stopped yourself.
Stopped
it was a teachable moment.
True.
And he went up to Mr. Hansen, and the next
Who
day.
Was that?
The next day.
That's
his counselor. Probably attracted to Ray physically. And Ray walked in the next day after everyone had now registered and every class was full. And Ray just went, "Get me in this class, get me in that class." And Mr. Hansen was like, "They're all
You're
full
naked.
Up. And he was like, come on. And they, like, put him in every class he wanted.
So where's the teachable moment in that?
Teachable moment is Ray.
I should have paid my dues.
Ray,
but you got everything you wanted, right?
Right.
Kind of, but
he carried that into adult life, you see.
Shouldn't have went that way.
He carried the, "I'm going to the beach."
But I'm saying that's why it was not a learnable moment, because it all worked out for him.
Well, it did.
At that point.
In reverse.
The message was sent that you may go to the beach on a Monday and then walk in on Tuesday and tell a guy with the funky mustache and sweater vest and get your way is not really what you want your kids doing in life. See what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Because in life,
it doesn't work that way.
Later on, when you do go to the beach, you come back. There is no Mr. Hansen. He tells you to fuck off and you get the shitty ceramics classes with me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wanted ceramics. That was one of my classes.
Hey, I was a ceramics major, so back off.
I was FFA.
Oh, yeah, Future Farmers of America. He lived in an apartment in North Hollywood with four brothers.
Three. Way in the future.
Bandis, didn't you slaughter a pig or something?
I witnessed that, and it was... No, I didn't. A Latin dude with a mobile butcher unit did. But you have to watch.
Yeah.
That's part of the...
You were around to put the rubber band around the pig's balls, though, right?
The castration part? No, yeah. I wasn't around. I mean, yeah, I was around. You see it. You see a cow, a steer get castrated too.
Yeah. Right in the middle.
You can eat them.
Right in the middle of North Hollywood.
Yeah, right in the middle. And then, but the sad part was mostly girls adopted the piglets, you know, all girls actually.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to sit there and watch their poor pig get slaughtered for market.
Yeah.
And they would be bawling. And you would feel so badly for them.
Yeah.
But I did not eat bacon for like a week.
Ooh, whole week.
Whole week I went.
It
I couldn't
been
eat
5
it.
Days.
Couldn't do it.
But after that week, you doubled down.
It was brutal.
Save.
And when they open them up and you hear the slosh just of the entrails and everything, it's just brutal.
No, I'm not going to eat bacon for 2 days.
2 days, yeah.
And that was Just the Tip with Ray Oldhoffer back in 2014.
How many friends do you have that wipe poop on you?
Ah, geez, it's been so long.
I figured on the bus, some shenanigans must have gone down.
No, the whole fecal matter wiping between friends, that That really skipped my
generation.
My generation, it feels like.
It's an 80s thing.
Yeah, it sounds more 80s. I think we became a touch more civilized after. All right, let's go with our second clip here. We're going to stay in 2014 and feature another Corolla Show regular, Dave Damashek.
Yeah, returning to the show after a bit of an absence, actually, in this one. It's Adam Carolla Show 1297. Reese Darby on this portion. He'll be in part two playing tomorrow in the Corolla Classics feed. Make sure you're subscribed. There's a separate RSS feed for Corolla Classics. You get the Saturday and Sunday shows. But also, make sure you're still subscribed to the Corolla Show because you're probably not going to get the shows all during the week. This episode, Reese Darby will come in part two. In this portion, just Dave Damashek from the top of the show. I cut out a topical sports segment. It was very, very about the, you know, the sports happening that weekend. There was some funny bits, but in order to just kind of make it more evergreen, left that part out. This portion, Dave thanks Adam for the goalposts, and it's a nice little chunk. Enjoy.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate. Get it on. Good day, Allison Rosen.
Hello, Adam Carolla.
And Bald Brian. Bald's walking in any second. Dave Damashek back on the program by popular demand.
Ace Carolla, what's the poop? What a pleasure. It's been too long. Muzzle tubs to pass around to Bald Brian for his book. To you for fixing the goalposts in the NFL, and of course to Allison Rosen on the recent nuptials.
Thank you. We, Bald Brian's got a little Baldywood. Captain America is what he's going to be reviewing. I had this happen. Now, you guys tell me, I know as Jews, you know that you can control the universe, but only the negative side of it.
That is how we operate, yes.
One of the tenets of being a Jew is you can't control anything from a positive standpoint, mm-hmm. but if you pray that somebody you don't want to see is, you know, not going to be at a party, then when you walk out of the bathroom, they'll be walking into the bathroom and you physically bump into them. Like, it's not enough that they're even at the party. They will be there, and you will make contact with them.
Right. It's like the secret, but for bad stuff.
Mm. Yeah. It's that.
The law of attraction.
I didn't realize that was universal to all Jews. I put that on myself.
Well, you haven't been coming to the meetings.
The Jewish thing is a lot of knocking on wood and a lot of you're going to jinx this and, you know, don't say it. And, you know, there's a lot of, I'll give you for instance, if you do like sitcoms, you're doing a lot of stuff out here in Hollywood and a lot of those showrunners and stuff. And if there's no way you can ever go, this show's for sure going to make the air, definitely going to make the fall schedule. They'll fucking scream at you. You don't.
Right. There's like a weird superstitiousness
amongst 50 something year old people with high degrees in education and are atheists will scream at you if you announce that something for sure is going to get on the air that they're working on.
I don't know if it's a saying or a philosophy or I don't know what it is, but at one point Jews were told or felt or something. This comes from my family who denied they were Jews, but also told me this one. Jews should never own anything so big you can't put it on your back.
Yep.
Like, it's a nomadic type of people.
That's right, like semen. You shouldn't own your Jew the second they told you that. So here's what happens. Here's what happened to me yesterday. Because I'm like an honorary Jew with this kind of stuff. I'm the guy who sees the pothole from a mile away and says, do not hit that pothole. Steer clear of that. Either split it, go right over the top of it, or right or left. And then at some point, you're going into the pothole. I was doing Kevin and Bean's April Foolishness stand-up show last night at the Shrine Auditorium. 6,300 people in the place, so it's not an intimate environment. And I've been so busy over the last 3 weeks, I had not given 5 minutes to what I was going to say for 15 or 20 minutes in front of 6,000 plus people out there. I've done enough. I'm not sweating it, but I hadn't put any time into it. There's been many other projects, many other endeavors that I've been involved with. So somewhere around yesterday, about 3 PM, I said, let me see what the lineup is here. And then I was looking at the lineup, some comedians you've heard of, most comedians you've heard of. And then I saw, well, there's Doug Benson, and here's the lineup. Doug Benson is going to go, then I'm going to go, then Jim Jeffries is going to go. And I think to myself, good, I'll go after Doug, but before Jim, because Jim's a he's a tiger up there on stage. He is a great stand-up, and he'll bring that whole place to life, because I've followed him before. I've done stand-up with him before. I've seen his stand-up specials, but he can handle himself in front of this large crowd, but a ton of energy. Doug, we love, much lower energy. I can come in and bring the energy up, but I don't want to go after Jim Jefferies.
You don't want to bum them out after
I don't
Jim
want to bum
Jefferies.
Them out after Jim Jefferies. And I haven't really given any thought to what I'm going to say in front of these 6,300 people. Of course, then, that's at 3 in the afternoon, and then smash cut to me watching Taylor, who...
Taylor Williamson.
Taylor Williamson. He's up on stage, second in America's Got Talent. And just standing backstage, off to the wings, just you can see the guy perform, but you can also see 3,000 of the 6,000 people that are out there, and it's Doug Benson. And I said, so let's see, Taylor's up, then you're up, then I'm up. And he said, nope, they switched things around. And then at that point...
You don't even need to know.
I don't need to know. They've reanimated Richard Pryor and George Carlin. They're both going up before you. I said, how's this going to go? Jim Jefferies going next, and then you, and then me. And I thought, it's my fault, because I took the time to think and care and want. Do you know what I mean? Of course. Just because I was looking at a lineup of that night's comedians at 3 in the afternoon that day, why would it ever go according to that lineup? That could never, never. And if things were switched around, of course they would get switched in such a way where it was exactly what I
didn't
thought. Yeah.
Now, do you feel there was foul play? Do you feel Doug Benson said, I would be more comfortable with this? Somebody had to do that. Why would they have switched it otherwise?
No, I think people didn't want to close. I think there were some people who may not have wanted to close, and I'm not sure exactly what happened. I didn't look at it as nefarious. I went out and did great, so it was fine by me. But, of course, Jim Jefferies was awesome as well, and he's a stand-up. You know, I'm kind of a storyteller. So I was like, but again, it was just exactly. How else could this have gone when I was standing in the wings? Over at the shrine built in, I don't know, 1920 something. Dave Damashek is here. I want to give you guys a little philosophy and tell me what you think. I hope it 1926 is when the shrine opened. I'm hoping Ball Bryan in studio.
Oh, look who it is.
Good, just in time for a little philosophy, Ball Bryan. I took my daughter today. We took her to her ice skating competition, and she was very nervous because she's done a lot of group-related ice skating things, but this was a solo ice skating thing. And she was sitting in the back of the car, and she didn't want to go. She felt sick to her stomach. She was nervous about going out on the ice alone for the first time. They announce your name, they play your song, and you're just kind of buzzing around there by your lonesome versus you and the 28 other pixies that are out there dressed in the same outfit. So she was sitting in the back seat of the car, and she said, you know, I'm kind of nervous about, and I don't feel good, and I don't know if I want to perform. And Lynette said, you got butterflies in your stomach. And she said, yeah, I got butterflies. And I said, I don't like to turn the topic toward myself. And my nanny went, no. But I said, you got to have butterflies. Yeah, everyone has a little butterflies. Alec Baldwin. Daddy was out last night at Shrine on Time. Dad had a little butterflies. That's all right. That's good. You want to put yourself in a position where you have butterflies, whether it's, I don't know, a first date or a performance or whatever it is that puts you out of that comfort zone into that situation. And if you really sort of think about your life in its totality as you get older and you stand back and you look at it, the more of those situations where you had butterflies, probably the richer and more interesting your life was. And I said, referring to my mom, I said, Grandma, never put herself in a situation where she had the butterflies, and she was on her butt, and time flies. And those are my butterfly stories. So if you want to spend time on your butt, time will fly. You will then get to the end of your life, and you'll sort of look back on it, and you'll go, well, I guess I never did put myself into that growth situation. Now, you can fall on your ass and on the ice. It's still never as bad as not getting out there at all. She won the gold medal.
Oh,
by the way, yeah,
good
it was
for her.
I was very impressed, and she did a great job.
Now, is gold first?
There's gold, then there's platinum, and then there's I think it's whatever that black card that Amex comes in.
Single diamond,
carbon.
Double diamond.
Yeah, it's a carbon.
Diamond.
It's a carbon Amex. She won first, but it didn't. It was out of three or four people, but it didn't matter. She felt like there was a certain point where if I said to her, "You want to just turn around and go home," she would have said, "Oh, turn around, let's go home." And I think we've all been in that position in life where we're kind of hoping for a snow day on a day we don't want to go out and do something that gives us butterflies. And she had that. It's a weird thing. Like, she's seven. She doesn't display butterflies, but she got butterflies because she knew what she had to do. And on the ride home, she'd never seen a happier kid or more satisfied kid.
And of course, she would have been desperately sad, or actually low-level sad, for the next couple of days if you would have turned the car around and spun around. That's what eats at you. Is you
yes.
think, oh, I got out of that, and that's the instant feeling. But then you do, you regret. What should I have gone? I should have done it.
Well, then, and also, whatever the worst-case scenario is, which is trying to pull off your camel or whatever you're pulling off and landing on your ass, that goes away in moments. The woulda, coulda, shoulda sort of hangs on for a lifetime.
Is that a move? A camel?
There's a sow toe and a camel.
Camel toe.
Camel toe. No, there's a camel. There's a double camel. There's got to be a single camel.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, there's a camel. Yeah. Reese Darby in studio. You probably know him best as the band manager on Flight of the Conchords. Also, a new show, 8-part mockumentary series about TV reporting in New Zealand. Short Poppies. Reese Darby in studio. Good to see you, Reese.
Thank you.
Reese says here you were in the military in New Zealand.
That's right. That's correct, sir.
How's that go? I've never thought about the New Zealand military.
It's good. It was small.
Yeah,
you know, there wasn't many of us. We didn't have much money.
Yeah, that's what you want in an army, quaint.
It's kind of
cozy.
Well,
cozy.
We had to sort of, you know, over in the American forces, there's a role for everyone. There's a lot of roles. We picked up five or six different jobs each because there's very few of us. So I guess we became multi-skilled.
Mm-hmm.
But the letdown was we couldn't afford to use the ammunition we did have. So when we trained. And this is true. We sort of ran through the forest yelling, bullets, bullets, bullets. We didn't use. And
right.
That's true. And it's kind of felt weird. I was 17 running through the bush going, bullets, bullets, bullets. And people were kind of, I'm hit. You know, but you had to just guess and stuff. It was a little weird.
I met one guy from New Zealand. I worked earthquake rehab work with him. His name was Fraser. And he was nuts, but in a fun way.
Yeah, right.
Like fun nuts. Is New Zealand are
that's a good way to describe
fun
us.
Nuts?
Fun nuts.
Over
yeah.
there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mixed nuts.
Something you'd get on an airplane, just a short flight.
Yeah,
the
small
fun
bag
nuts.
Of fun nuts.
Yeah, and the silver bag.
Yeah.
Yeah, pardon me, but like the difference between New Zealand and Australians, what's the main difference between the two?
Well,
besides the fun nuts part.
Australia, okay, so I guess obviously two separate countries.
Sure.
We're the little islands off to the side. But the main difference, I guess, would be that the British landed in Australia. They took their convicts to Australia,
mm-hmm.
and they sort of wiped out the indigenous people. Not completely, but, you know, there was a lot of bad stuff happening there. The people that came to New Zealand weren't convicts. They came even further to get to our place, and they were looking for a new life, and looking, there were people that had money, and they ended up there buying land, and then our indigenous people, the Maori, were warriors as opposed to the Aborigine, who were very peaceful people. Uh-huh. So they fought with our indigenous people, the Maori, for 25 years, the British, mm-hmm. and it was a stalemate in the end.
So you guys, less peaceful than the Australians, but then maybe evened out by the convicts?
Put up a fight, as you would when people arrive in boats. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, what's going on? You're not having, this is our place.
I mean, they have an army, after all.
Back then, they ran yelling spears, arrows, through the forest. They didn't have bullets back then. Yeah. Eventually, it worked into musket balls.
Yeah.
So how do you get from there to here, or do you go from there to England and then here?
I went to England first. Actually, Scotland, really. It was Edinburgh, but I guess I went through London. But the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, mm-hmm. the big arts festival, that took me out of New Zealand, really. I'd been to Australia once, but that didn't really count. So for me, that was the big overseas experience. And then I stayed there in Scotland for 6 months. Loved Edinburgh. Amazing city.
Do people look at the U.S. when they grow up outside the U.S. and they're interested in the arts, but specifically comedy? Mm-hmm. Do they look at the U.S. as sort of the final destination?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think we all respect that stand-up came from here, but in the U.K., it's people are earning money doing stand-up. There's far more clubs.
In the UK.
There's far more money. And I think a few Americans go there, and Canadians. And you can work 6-7 nights a week, do 3 gigs a night. And, you know, there's a lot of travel involved. But people come to the club, so they're all packed. They like going to live comedy in the UK. So I think
that's because they're smarter.
I don't know. I guess so. But you know what? They heckle, and you've got to be good. And it really gets your skill level up. And I was there for 7 years treading the boards on the clubs there before I came to America.
Mm-hmm. I don't know gay slang, but I'll
whatever, treading the boards.
Whatever it takes to get a gig. Listen, I understand. It's not gay if you're getting a gig.
So the heckling is worse there than at clubs here?
Oh, yeah.
Is it worse there? I've done some stuff in like Vancouver, and it's not that the heckling is worse; it's that they're drunk.
Yeah, that's usually they go hand in hand. I mean, and they like drinking, as you know, in the United Kingdom. And so you go to some good comedy clubs that's controlled, and you get kicked out. Right. But there's a lot of gigs where you can go that are just pub gigs or whatever, and you know, they're less controlled. And but you know, you've got to have your wits about you, and they sort of look at you, and you've got 30 seconds to impress. You know, you've probably heard that thing when you just stand up, and if you don't get them in that time, then they're going, oh, here we go, I'm going to say something. This guy's no good. You know, I'm going to say it now. Get off. You know, and there it is. So
does it have you had any good stories, altercations, bottles thrown at you, that kind of good stuff?
I have. I was on once, I can't remember where it was, might have been some festival gig. They couldn't hear me. What usually the problems if the mic is the, if the sound is bad, it's I'm in trouble, because mm-hmm. I do a lot of sound effects and things. So if there's a lot of people talking, if there's drunkenness, I can break into some helicopter sounds, and usually that gets people's attention. They go, oh, this guy, oh, okay, mm-hmm. that's me. So
that was really good.
It's one of my early ones. But if the mic is cutting out or anything like that, and I'm sort of at a loss, or if someone for some reason has something against New Zealanders, you know, one time there was a.
Can you give us a little helicopter as long as?
There you
wow.
go. That's
uncanny.
Yeah. But so,
well, now we need a Brian, stop. We need a taste.
I'm not doing anything, bro.
Why don't you use your sound effects to get this one done? Okay, here we go.
There you go.
When you get back to camp.
I like
that was
when it
really
goes
good.
Away. Yeah.
Doppler effect.
Mostly they just hover. This one actually went by.
It just fly by.
When mm-hmm. did you realize you could do this?
When I was a kid. I used to play with all my little Hot Wheels cars and little action figures and things, and I would create scenes and really act out these things, and I'd do all the sound effects that go with them, so you know, the noises of all the cars and helicopters and machine guns and stuff. And I just, you know, then when I started doing stand-up, I just brought those noises into my stories, and just it was just felt natural to me. And then I guess I kind of thought everyone could do that, but then someone said to me, not everyone wants to do that, let alone can do it, but... Yeah, it's not something I practiced. I mean, obviously I watched Police Academy and I was a fan of Michael Winslow, but it's not something I you know, stood in front of the mirror going, oh, I've got to get my lips right. I've got to make sure I can do all these cool sounds. It certainly wasn't a way of getting in with the ladies, put it that way. You know, when I was in my late teens, early 20s, it wasn't a hook.
No.
Half of the guys I've dated have been able to do it.
Yeah, they want to hear Jimmy Stewart impressions. They don't. That's helicopter's not going to do it for the ladies.
Robotic, anything machinery, like I can do. All that sort of stuff. Yeah. So, as I say, chicks didn't really dig it, but guys seemed to laugh.
Mm-hmm. How did you go from being in the army to getting into comedy? Did you always want to do comedy?
It wasn't really there. It wasn't available in New Zealand. And so I was kind of like, I've always been into comedy. I've always made people laugh. But I, for some reason, became a soldier. And I think in that time, 4 years in, I realized this is not for me. I kind of felt that I wanted to be an actor playing the soldier, not actually being the soldier. And the whole bullets thing was the last straw. So I left there, went to university, and then it was at uni that I really found myself. And it was a society comedy club. I enlisted. I think this would be a way to meet like-minded people. And we wrote, once a week, we wrote comedy, and then we performed it, and it just felt right.
I was just, watching a bio thing on Larry the Cable Guy, and every single comic on any of those biography shows, and you guys tell me the batting average, which one is higher. I laugh about it all the time. No model ever says, I looked in the mirror when I was 14, saw a hot chick looking back at me, and decided to sign up for a modeling competition. They always say, my friend signed me up for the modeling competition. And stand-up comedians never say, I was always the funniest fucking dude at my workplace, so I signed. It's always, my friends pushed me up on stage. It's the same. It's a version. It's the male version and the female version. Nobody wants to say I'm beautiful. No one say I'm funny, or I knew I was beautiful, or I knew I was funny. So, but your coworkers or your friends or whoever, with women, it's I went with one of my friends on an audition, and the person spotted me instead. Larry the Cable Guy's friends pushed him up on stage. It's always, but I don't know if that happens. Were you pushed up on stage by your friends or told to model by your friends?
I wasn't pushed at all. Like I said, I joined.
Neither was I. I was like, I'm funny. And everyone's like, no, don't go.
Well,
and
right. Like, you pushed through it yourself. Anyway. Yeah, I think I did the same thing. I loved watching, and I was a little obsessed with British comedy growing up. And I just wanted to be one of those guys one day. I didn't know how it was going to happen.
Were you Monty Python? Yeah, were you Python a Benny fan. Hill guy?
All of it, but Python particularly. And then I got into the Goons and then Peter Sellers.
Goonies?
Yeah, the Goons. No, not Goonies. That's an American
I thought that
movie.
Was something else. Oh, Goons were the... Oh, that's Goodies, I'm thinking
Oh,
of.
You're thinking of the Goodies. I love the Goodies as well.
Goodies, so it was, goody, yeah. Num, num.
Yeah, you should check them out.
There was a band. I mean, there was a group. There's a...
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, there were Goodies.
There's no show like that ever over here. It's kind of sketch, but it runs a full narrative each show, and it's really bizarre. And I just wanted to be. I wanted to be in a sketch troupe, I guess. But I didn't. My friends, they weren't. So I ended up playing all the roles myself, and that ended up being my stand up. So my stand up is very actor sort of based, and it's it's physical.
And I forgot about the Goodies. A couple of those shows were imported in here. I think Benny Hill had some success.
It sounds kind of like Flight of the Conchords, a sketch that runs a full narrative. I mean, essentially, that's kind of what
there
it is.
There were the
the same ballpark. We all loved
version
it.
Of the Bugaboos or something. There was some sort of – there was a lot of British stuff that would either show up in the morning or they would show up in the evening. And the British were always weird. I never could figure them out because they seemed very buttoned up, buttoned down, but then had a crazy, twisted sense of humor that seemed very sophomoric and adolescent.
Yeah.
And so it seemed weird that it would
very
be.
Very intellectual, but very schoolboy, very naughty, very toilet humor, but very clever
but then,
at the same time.
Yeah, but then the culture was, you know, powdered wigs and wearing suits, you know.
Well, what
to go
century
down to
are we talking about?
What I'm saying is the. I mean, what I guess what I'm saying is in the United States, we're a little more, we wear flip-flops and cut-off sweats, but then we also like Larry the Cable Guy. But our apparel and attire sort of works with our comedy sensibilities.
Right, right.
The English seem very proper, educated, and buttoned down, and then their humor was way just bizarre and way,
maybe,
you know,
that's
Monty
the whole,
Python.
The whole repressed thing, the whole, you know, it's the classes, it's being told what to do and being stuck in an order. And that you just explode, and that's why they're absurdity.
That's where you have the Japanese culture bowing all the time, or eating sushi off a virgin, or making bukkake film. You know, it's like, which is it? Like, what is it? Which is it? And then you realize once you have this order, it comes out in a weird way.
With eels.
Yeah, whereas here, we just tell everyone, do whatever you want, and it just sort of comes out in the middle.
It's different. It's laid back. It's you're right, though. I think we're on track there. And New Zealand, again, we kind of had a very British culture, obviously, being part of the Commonwealth, but we had a lot of our popular culture came from America as well. We had a lot of American television growing up, so it was pretty much 50-50.
What did you watch growing up?
Mork and Mindy, MASH.
Helicopters.
Yeah, that's where I first got the helicopters, you know.
Uh-huh. How about Robin Williams doing all those crazy sounds?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, he's fantastic. Obviously, he was definitely an inspiration to me.
And I'm trying to think of all the... Yeah, so all that stuff would have been piped over to you growing
Huge
up.
Huge pick. Yeah, Cheers. You know, all those big
Cheers,
ones.
Right. And did all that stuff...
Taxi.
All that stuff translated just fine, or who cares if it did or didn't?
It was bizarre, because I think someone said that our motorway system was based on the LA freeway system.
Oh, really?
So there's something to do with it. Well, it's not obviously this quite colossal here. Ours is like three roads, but for some reason, I don't know, something with the way the lights work. There's something. So there's definitely some American influences and something and stuff we have, which is interesting.
By the way, Reese's website is at Reese Darby. It's RHYS, and I think. Well, it's actually Reese. Reese Millen is a race car driver, and I think Reese is, and I think he's from New Zealand, by the way. We could figure that one out, but Steve Millen's son. Either way, I think Reese is a little more common, or at least there's two Reeses I know now, you and another one.
And it's spelt like that, Welsh.
I think they're both spelt that way, and we'll figure it out. All right. Oh, so Reese, you like all the... Do you like all the superhero shit stuff? Art?
I don't mind it.
Okay. All right. Good. Because we have, I think we're doing, Captain? No, wait a minute.
It is.
Captain America?
Captain America 2.
All right. Let's do it.
Hooray for Bollywood. He will tell you if a movie's good. Brian will review the flicks that he's seen upon the big screen or in his Netflix queue. Before you spend bucks, remember his taste sucks. He loved that train wreck piece of shit, Transformers 2. Hooray for Bollywood.
Captain America, The Winter Soldier is what it's called. Mm-hmm. That's the full title. It's in theaters now. And it is directed by Anthony and Joe Russo. They're best known for their TV work, Community, Arrested Development. They did a show called Carpoolers, which I thought was really good. It was
I remember
O'Connell
that.
And ran T.J. Miller was in that. It was really funny. But they did that show. Also, they directed You, Me, and Dupree. So I was a little hesitant going in knowing that. Also, the writers were the writers of the last Captain America movie. They also wrote Pain and Gain. Both slightly above. Have you seen Pain and Gain yet? It seemed like a movie you'd enjoy. It's above average.
No, I saw Pain and Gain.
You saw it.
It's one of those can't go wrong kind of Pain and Gain.
The story was interesting.
Yeah.
So right away you've got at least an okay movie.
Yeah, it's just they do that thing where they go, oh, it's based on true events, and then at some point The Rock jumps into a canal and he's swimming along and the cops are shooting at him and they blow his toe off and then he doubles back in the dark canal underwater and fishes his severed toe off and then keeps swimming and you go, That happened?
Yeah.
And then they go,
it's a little fantastical.
Oh, no, not not this. And you go, okay, well, if you do the this is what happened, then that should have happened. And that didn't happen. Or don't fucking start the story with this is what happened.
Yeah, so
and then that didn't happen.
It got a little fantastical. That was that part of that
got
movie.
Got a lot fantastical.
Yeah, a lot fantastical. This movie is very fantastical, starring Chris Evans, once again, Captain America. Scarlett Johansson's in this one. Anthony Mackie. Robert Redford's in this. And Samuel L. Jackson have big parts. Did you guys see the first Captain America that came out a few years ago?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I liked it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was pretty good, too.
Yeah. I like the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Hugo Weaving?
Yeah, he's cool.
He's Australian, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, there you go.
But I thought you hate them.
Oh, that's, well.
Mm-hmm.
Did you or your kids see?
Fuck no. Fuck an adult. What would I watch that shit for?
Okay, here's... So, Reese, you'll appreciate this. Here's the problem with the Captain America and the Avengers overall is...
Captain America.
Yeah, the problem is they go to great lengths to explain plausibly how a 98-pound weakling, Steve Rogers, becomes Captain America. He has the serum and the super soldier program and the whole thing. And it's science fiction. They're explaining it, you know, suspension of disbelief. And then he fights flaming Nazi monsters, you know, like flaming skull monsters. And it's like, well, now there's a supernatural element, so why did you even bother going through all the explanation? Why can't he just fight...
This is my whole point, like when Superman lifts a diesel locomotive, but he has to strain.
Yeah.
You know, why is he straining? And then, yes, there is that element in all these movies where they try to justify, well, no, his shield shields off the this or his hammer works as, and then Mountain Monster comes alive.
Yeah.
And now we're into another world.
And the problem with the Avengers, again, I don't know if you saw that one or if you guys did, but now you've got Captain America and Iron Man who are science fiction guys. They built their suits or they're human beings who have, you know, who are exceptional. But then you got Thor who's from a magic land and has a magic hammer. And now it's like, well, who's in whose universe? Because this guy has magic.
Yeah. Yes, I was completely down with the first Iron Man.
Yeah, because it was totally plausible.
Built the suit and he built... It's not plausible, but it's technologically, mathematically possible.
In theory, you could do it.
Your takedown of these nerd movies makes you sound like bigger nerds.
Yeah.
It's so true.
But
you're not doing yourself any favors here, guys.
It's like having some sort of weird, it's like having a strongman competition where everyone's training very hard and muscle bound and ready to go, and then one guy's just from a different planet and can lift everything with a pinky without bending at the knee. And
why
then you're like,
why make
two separate? You're making two movies and blending them together.
That was my thing with Avengers. I thought when I watched that, I thought Thor could just take care of all this.
Yeah, they have Hulk.
Don't need it. And Hulk.
He's literally undefeatable.
Yeah. So Captain America did feel valuable. Felt like a bit of a buff head with a shield.
Yeah, but it's a little more down to earth than this one. There's a vengeance thing where someone makes an attempt on someone's life and blah, blah, blah. It's actually a pretty good movie. This one is, it's getting 89% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is pretty high.
By the way, if you want to take these two genres and sort of mix them, meaning like a crazy, fantastic stuff versus sawed off shotgun, you do Terminator.
Yes.
That because this guy's from the future, so there's technology that doesn't exist today, and he's come back to fight the guy on the Harley with the shotgun.
Yeah.
Now we have it.
Well, that's science fiction. That's when you go to lengths to explain how this happened. And then there's just fantasy where this guy's from another universe, and he has a magic hammer.
I think one of the things is there's no rules anymore. And
that's right.
That's just confusing for us older guys who, you know, we need rules. You know, otherwise nothing doesn't make sense.
I agree.
And the kids, they think, there's no rules. You do whatever you like. And they're not being brought up right. And then they're trying to get everything for free on the internet.
Yeah.
Because there's no rules.
There's no rules. I agree.
Some really good fight scenes. So really good humor, actually, in this movie. The guys who directed it, you know, did the Community and Arrested Development. So some good humor in this. One thing there's not, it's a great villain. All great action movies need that great villain, whether it's Star Wars or Die Hard or classic Bond movies. Kind of have the great villain. And the villain, there's two. One is a frail old man, and the other one is this mute ass-kicker who never talks. And you're like, well, I don't know anything about him, and he's not compelling.
Can I say something about villain and your age as a villain? I feel like you either have to have that sort of, boy wonder kind of thing, like the young computer hacker. There's the 22-year-old, crazy computer guy. And then there's the old Bond villain. But from your age, maybe 26 to 41.
Those
not,
are prime villainy years.
Not good villain years.
Oh, those are not.
You got to go young
or
you got to go
old.
I
see. You
no
be
one, no yeah. one wants to see just a 40-year-old villain.
Okay, that's
it
a good point.
Doesn't work out well. You
You're right. All the best Bond
villains
have some years on their tires.
I mean, now there's also young computer hacker guys, too.
We still have fear and respect for the elderly. We still have, you know, which is a human thing, which is great. Mm-hmm. And we also fear the unknown, the ultra brain nerdy 20-something where you
who has no rules.
How is he doing that? And that's scary.
Yeah, no one's scared of 43-year-old guys.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yep. This is
we're set in our ways.
That's right. Sorry.
It's not a perfect movie, but it is way, way better than most of the superhero sequels. Head and shoulders above most of them. So
let me ask you this.
Yeah?
When you get to the 71-year-old villain, has he been villainizing his entire career and we just
peaking?
Caught up to him now and he's peaking at 71? And was he a villain when he was 50? And then how come no one ever really caught up to him? Like, was there ever a situation where the guy, like 32 years ago, like, what's that guy building a lair on top of a volcano for? Yeah. Ah, don't worry about him. Leave him alone.
It won't last.
Yeah, he's got a huge laser beam that's fixed toward the sun. He's going through a phase. It'll never be done in our lifetime.
Yeah, you figure, like, you know, we all know guys who like to fight more when they were younger because they had more testosterone. There's angry young men. Now they're older, they're chilling out
but
or whatever.
They never explain with the Bond villains who are, like, in their mid-60s, was this guy villainizing all throughout his 20s, 30s, and 40s? Or did he just pick this up, like, with a, you know...
That's a great idea.
A thing like empty nest syndrome. You know, kids went off to college.
Like a retirement kind
You know
of
what
thing.
I mean? He came, just got bored playing Mahjong.
We need to do some prequels of these older villains and find out how they got to be where they are and watch their early villainous years.
Yeah, because especially like some of those Bond guys, and then how come we didn't have our eye on them?
Yeah.
Like, why did we not know?
Ernest Stavro Blofeld.
Yeah. Well, some of them were hurt, Ernest. Right? And that's why they turned to the dark side?
They all seem to have some scarring about the eyes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's
maybe
again.
Walk with a cane or something like that.
Yeah.
Love of, you know, a certain facet of art and that kind of stuff. But still, they should either be coming out of prison or fresh off their last villain conquest.
Learning the villain ropes.
That's right.
It took them years to build up their villainous empire, though, and have all their, you know, people in the different sectors.
Yeah. I just like the idea that they've built these things on these giant compounds on islands, and yet...
Which probably took a year, and no one said anything, and the time was being constructed.
Longer than that.
Quite a bit longer. It had to take a decade to build
those.
Inside
volcanoes and stuff like that. But it's all very hush-hush, and it's in places where you wouldn't... These days, you'd see with Google.
You'd need permits.
But back in those days, you could build these massive lairs.
Mm-hmm.
But now, it's more difficult.
You young villains have it so good these days.
Yeah. All right, I'm sorry. So you give it a...
It was a good movie, better than most of these sequels, so B+, good flex. Check it out.
Wow.
Hooray for Bollywood!
All right, I know Reese has a hard out, which is about now. Short Poppies is the name of the mockumentary. It's 8-part. It's directed, well, I should tell you where to find it. It's now on Netflix as we speak, and it's directed by, Jim? Jermaine?
Well, Jermaine was in the Concords with me. Yeah. He directed 2 episodes. And Michelle Walsh directed the rest of them.
And they're all available on Netflix as we speak.
Yeah.
All right. So look for that. And Reese Darby as well. Reese, come back when you have some more time and hang
I'd love
out
to.
And say hi.
It's been awesome. Thanks, guys.
Our pleasure. All right. Check will swap out with Reese. I'll give you a little love to LifeLock, baby. Identity thieves, man. They're shrewd. They're targeting your checking account, your savings account. They're coming after your cash. They're coming after your retirement. Allison, what do you know?
Well, listen to this. It's tax time. Perhaps you're going to get your taxes done.
Sure.
A Florida tax preparer has pleaded guilty to identity theft and other crimes in an income tax refund scheme. He used the names, birthdates, social security numbers, and addresses of up to 50 clients to file fraudulent income tax returns claiming refunds in their names, and he received like $355,000 in fraudulent tax refunds.
Oh, those Australians. LifeLock Ultimate, the most comprehensive ID theft protection ever created. It guards your identity and credit, even monitors your bank accounts for takeover fraud. Awarded best in detection among ID protection programs. Dawson.
LifeLock Services can't protect you or your bank accounts if you're not a member. Visit LifeLock.com and enter promo code ADAM for a special 10% discount. That's promo code ADAM at LifeLock.com to get our special 10% discount. LifeLock.com. Network does not cover all transactions.
All right. Sorry about that, Sheck. Reset a hard out.
What a slap in the face.
I'm sorry. Now, listen. We're looking for some creep of the week. We'd like to hear a little more.
I like
sports.
To say it, but I have some other things I want to weigh in on. One, first of all, Bald Brian, the ultimate in the mismatched hero versus villain, as I've said a million times, you're a front runner if you are a Superman guy. Of all the superheroes in the world, if you're rooting for Superman, it's like rooting for the New York Yankees as a baseball fan.
Yeah.
He's supposed to win. He's made of steel. He shoots lasers from his eyes, and he goes faster than a speeding bullet, and his arch nemesis is a middle-aged bald man who's smart.
Well, it's not holding the bald thing against him, but I agree with you.
Yeah, he can actually get the Earth to spin counterclockwise.
Yeah, so what? But Lex Luthor is super smart. You know, he did really well on his SATs. He got 1,500 something, I think, and he only took it once.
You're right.
That's Superman's arch nemesis? One. Two. Well, who would win in a fight, Superman or the Hulk, since they're both indestructible?
Well, the Hulk is very sensitive when he's not being the Hulk. And it's unclear that the Hulk is indestructible or he's just a huge, strong guy.
No, indestructible.
Oh, yeah, he absorbs rockets.
But here's the math that I could never understand, whether it be the Hulk or whether it would be, King Kong. You know, you go, well, King Kong, he is the size of a six-story building. So a bullet to King Kong would just be like a kernel of rice to you. Like, be just nothing to you. Right. But a Sidewinder missile with an explosive tip with spent uranium in it would surely be like you getting shot with a hollow tip bullet. So why wouldn't that blow the flesh and blood? The stuff that are made of flesh and blood, why is it no missile? I mean, we do have bunker busters. We do have missiles that go through, 14 stories of concrete, each 3 foot thick, and then explode when they get to the core at the bottom. Why? That would not break your skin? Well, now, even if you had scales on you? That's the part I never understand.
In Superman Returns, he takes a 50 caliber bullet to the eyeball and it bounces off him. So I'm thinking if push comes to shove, Superman would probably
Well, Superman is superhuman.
Yes, he's from another planet.
But Godzilla... Mm-hmm. Is a reptile.
Yes, he's a large reptile.
And as I've said, you take a...
Oh, is that right? I didn't know the origin of Godzilla.
You take a A-10 Warthog with the Gatling gun and the spent uranium shells, and you just shred him. If it'll shred a tank, it'll shred Godzilla. That's the flesh and blood stuff I never understood. Sorry.
Well, I think the correct answer is, to my own question, is I think Superman wins because... The Hulk is not super smart. No. And I think all he would have to do, Superman, is grab the Hulk by his toe, drag him out into space, and leave him there. Where are you going to go now, the Hulk? How are you getting back? You don't know where you are.
He fights like Clubber Lang.
That's a fine comparison. The other thing, you're dead on, Ace, or whoever said it. We need rules. The rules exist. It's not that the rules aren't there. It's that they're not being that no one's paying attention to them. In superhero movies, 75 or 100 years worth of comic books of Spider-Man never taking his mask off for anybody. Same thing for Batman. We can't make it 90 minutes in a movie without them having to show who they are to any woman who shares her bed with them. I find that outrageous. Same thing for these vampire movie people. Playing fast and loose with what we know the laws are. There are so many vampire rules, and you know what they are. You can't see his reflection. The water that's been blessed is going to burn you. But in these vampire movies, they're hitting me. Oh, I threw the holy water. That doesn't work. That's just in books. No, you don't get to change the rules. They're there for you.
Have you seen True Blood? Totally changes everything.
It's nonsense.
No garlic issues, no silver bullet.
But now the silver bullet does work. That's what they do within these movies. It's outrageous.
Mm.
I don't care for it.
Speaking of nerd-type issues, one time the question was posed to me, if you could have any magic power, what would it be? And of course, I said the one that everyone says, which is the best one, flying. And every nerd behind that glass freaked out and said, no. Oh, and you're nodding, Brian. Teleporting. Because you could just teleport really fast, and that's the same as flying.
Well, invisibility
is faster than flying.
Invisibility is really the better one.
Invisibility?
Yeah.
You over teleporting or flying?
I feel like you're halfway there.
No. Teleporting is actually pretty good.
Keep trying.
I feel like that was
more years.
I feel like that was a dig.
No, I'm just saying. It's just not
I feel
that
like
much
that was a
to see. You know?
Swipe look at expense. You. Your superpowers apparently you're impervious to people's insults.
I didn't notice when you came in.
Okay.
I
feel like that was a swipe at my expense.
No, I'm saying it's a superpower and you're half.
Oh, you're celebrating know what? Your invisibility.
Yeah.
So I should take that in the spirit which is intended.
Well, what if it was incredible strength or ability to levitate or fly or use telepathy? And I said, you're halfway there.
Okay.
All right.
Having no one noticed me.
He could have said, okay. He said your superpower is boring people to death. He didn't say that, did he?
I feel like this is going in the right direction. I don't feel like this is taking
hey, are you
going
to do this
the wrong way?
Are you going to do the Johnny Depp picture? Because I have forever.
Oh, transcendence.
I've said, grow up, everybody, with this nonsense. It's the 21st century. It's not the year 500 anymore where you can indulge the hokum, the hooey and applesauce about living forever. You're going to live eternally because you lived the right way. All that nonsense. And now all of a sudden, we're on the cusp of something important here. Computers already can replicate our intellect. It's just about our emotions now. That's the final hurdle. But it appears they're getting closer. And I talk to smart people like Rick Rosner, our mutual pal, the lunatic.
With the grotesque toe. Yeah.
Yes. He believes that they are onto something. And this is what the Johnny Depp picture is about, right?
A movie called Transcendence coming out. I saw the trailer today, actually, with Johnny Depp.
What is it? Yeah, how does it work?
The short version is he gets shot and he dies, but they put his consciousness into a computer, and the computer becomes him, a virtual version
it's like
of
her
him.
In a way.
Yeah, but it's in a more action-y,
sure.
You know, end of the world.
But the
way.
Point is this: if this is actually we're close to this, I think I almost want to whisper it. I don't know if we should talk about this publicly, but I'm going to right now. Shouldn't our objective individually and collectively be just keep ourselves alive now? I mean, that's all that matters now. And the people who won't are the same people who thumb their nose. They're like, hey, you know, fast food is really bad for you. And it's going to kill you. You know, like, I don't care. I'll eat what I want. Nobody's going to tell me what I put in my body. All those people are going to be morbidly obese in about 20 years, right when this technology hits. And then they're going to be frustrated because they're on death's door and they'll want to stay alive. But the people who stay fit, it'll be an unseemly war between morbidly obese people charging the fitful.
Let me ask you.
Charging slowly.
A couple things. Hypothetical. First off, back to the flying thing. Don't you think you would fuck yourself up if you could fly like an old person on a skateboard at a kid's party where you're like, I'm just going to go down and you'd fuck your shit up royally?
Probably.
Yeah.
First off, if you could fly, it wouldn't be at a super leisurely clip. You'd zoom. And you'd for sure get caught up in some power wires. You'd hit the side of a mountain. You'd clip a small aircraft. I mean,
they always come with that additional strength to survive that. Spider-Man and Superman.
No, but just you flying.
All that, you're right on.
You'd fly.
You'd be freezing, first of all.
You'd freeze your ass off. You'd probably get lightheaded, and you'd fly right in the side of Half Dome. Just splat.
How hasn't that happened to the Flash? Nothing. He didn't see anything. He never did. Oh, whoa. I didn't notice that tree around the corner and run into it. That's the end.
And let me ask you this. If you had the choice, if we said, look, this technology is right around the corner, this thing where you'll go on forever. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to rejuvenate you. Now, this technology is 40 years away. By the time it comes around, you're going to be 90 years old or 80 years old. You'll have an old body, and then you can go on.
No, then you could just be a chip, and they'll shoot us all. The Earth will be destroyed anyway.
No,
we're not going to be able to.
What I'm saying is this. Would you put yourself down now? I don't mean tomorrow, but I mean somewhere in the next
few months,
decade, let's say. I'll give you 10 years, you know. See your kids graduate junior high and get ready for junior college and things like that. Get your shit together, but go down and relatively, you know, you still have all your hair, your organs are functioning. Then we freeze you. Then you'll be reanimated in 50 years and you'll be back into this body versus the 82-year-old body. with the huge, you know, with the huge prostate.
I would need to really, really.
You guys aren't going to
forget me, right? That would be my concern. Like,
yeah.
I need to really be sure they can really do it.
Right, but I'm just saying, would you flip
that
switch and go, I'd like to come back with my joints relatively, you know, not after I've had my hip replaced, not after I had the gallbladder surgery and that this went bad and my back's all fucked up and my hair's all falling out.
Yeah, that would be a curse to have eternity in a shitty body.
Yeah, it's a weird form of hell, actually. Yes, you forever are 93.
You come back looking like the mascot from Magic Mountain.
You live forever, but you always want to take a nap.
Can you dance like him?
You can't dance like him. That's the thing. You just look like the guy from Magic Mountain.
Very
sly. I have a question, though. In this world where computers can upload your consciousness and your emotions and your intellect and all this, does your consciousness persist, though? Or is it just they can recreate you? Like, other people get to enjoy Damashek, or you go on?
Well, listen. I only dabble in science.
Enjoy Damashek?
No.
It's a new world.
No, we're throwing it at you. I thought we were attacking Bald Brian. When did this turn to me? I don't care for that. Listen, what do I know? I don't know about this. It's just like everybody else. I want to live forever, and I like the sound of what they're saying.
Either way, Depp is sure to have super blowhardy answers about this phenomenon and his character, right?
The trailer opens up with him giving essentially a TED Talk, but it's in Johnny Depp voice, but he's a scientist. We can
pitch
people
from
dying in the future.
He's going to have to, someone's going to tell him he's going to have to hit the gym to support his extra scarves that he's going to don during this tour. Like he probably has a trainer going, we need to get more lower body strength to support those scarves. He is going to...
He should add free weights to the scarves.
Yeah, he's going to... Because he's inevitably going to get the question, do you think this is possible? Would you want this for yourself? How do you identify with this character? And then look out, open... the floodgates and let the blowharding begin.
We went into some dark places.
Well, yeah, right. And he took the character home.
I need to ask a question before we just blow right past it. Who's your friend who's a lunatic but who's smart but who has a grotesque toe?
Rick Rosner.
Bring him on the podcast. He's always weird.
Rick Rosner re-entered high school at age 30?
I think he went back to high school, and he didn't do it just once. He went back to high school just to experience, I believe, at least, I think he did it at least two extra times.
He said he wanted
to do that.
He wanted to see high school through the urethra of an adult. That's what I would like to see high school. I'd like to go back and finish some unfinished business. He went back he could have been 28.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, and then
got
in fact,
a fake ID. Like shaved his chest.
Errol Morris, the acclaimed documentarian, made a documentary about Rick Rosner. That's how fascinating a guy he is.
And what's
unless
going
you're
on with
unless
toe?
You're hanging out
he
with him.
He has
no, I kid.
A toe that when somebody is making fun of somebody having big ears or, plump lips or fat ass or big Adam's apple or something. It's always a little be prepared to be disappointed when you do actually see the person. Be prepared to be overwhelmed
with nausea
by Rick Rosner's second toe, not the big toe, the second one
is as big as his.
Well, it's longer and it's beefier.
It's where the wild things are, kind of foot.
I mean,
I've gone on and on about my male foot issues. These people the men who take out their bare stinking feet. This is vomitous.
It really makes me sick. Just one. No, is it just on one foot?
Yeah. I believe it's just the right.
Jimmy's had it cast. Jimmy cast it and poured a rubber likeness of it, like Ron Jeremy would do with his dick,
Jimmy
or something
who?
Like that. Kimmel, I know you know. Sorry. Yes, yeah. Kimmel has the guy's foot up in his office, but I mean the picture. I mean, Gary, you might be able to find Rick Rosner's
toe.
I
guarantee you it's available online.
It has a Twitter account.
It's insane.
If you have a thing about I can't stand the look of men's feet and everything like I do, this might really make you vomit. It's really awful. It's one of the worst things.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Yes,
it's
a grotesquery.
It is grotesquery, and it's in the highest order. But, I mean, it's just a huge...
It's just big and hairy?
It's just a tremendous second toe. I think that'd be the second one. I can't figure out the toes.
It's the little piggy that had none.
Well, no, it's like
oh,
it's
it
like
some.
It's like lanes on a freeway. The number one lane is the far right or the far left. The big toe is that, and then there's the number two toe or the number one toe. I don't know what toe that is.
I think number two was like the index finger toe. Yeah.
Okay, well, the number two toe of Rick Rosner is bigger than you've ever seen on any foot. Or it's where the wild things are.
It's bigger than my thumb.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's not an exact... It literally is about the size of my thumb. Look at that. And this is not an exaggeration.
But
is
only on one foot.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's about the size of my thumb. That's what it looks... It is... If it ever touched me, I don't know.
And does he wear sandals? How did he see this? Or does he brag?
No, he does not wear sandals. He goes nude. Mm-hmm. He will go nude. He's done a lot of nude modeling.
He's got varicose veins, so he wears tight socks. Extra pairs of socks.
Dude, this is getting Bill Brasky-esque.
Listen, he is an onion. I don't know how he hasn't been on this show, come to think of it.
We should book
Rick. He really is.
But there's a documentary made about him and about him going back to high school, and you can find it. He could have been 25. He could have been 28, but he went.
He's Mensa, one of the highest IQs recorded. And
he was a millionaire? Who wants to be a millionaire?
Oh, yeah. Huh? And he sued. Yes. And then he sued. He sued ABC as the Kimmel Show was starting.
Right. I forgot about that.
Said, well, we're not employing as one of your writers, the guy who is suing us, Jimmy.
All right. Let's do a little creep of the week.
Let's do it. Hit it, Bald. Creep of the week. He or she is the creep of the week. I just read that they've begun shooting Star Wars. I don't know if that will wind up on the jerk list or if they'll get a get out of jerk free card. Time will tell on that one. I'll tell you who does get a get out of jerk free card today. Popina Quay. Oh, what a name that is. Popino the Cucumber. I love him. Cucumber Quavis. Speaking of names.
Striking fear into the hearts and salads of opponents.
Did his fans wave, throw cucumbers as he came away?
It's one of their, different cultures. I feel like our nicknames are either spot on or we go the opposite. We either the guy's huge and we call him Moose, or the guy's huge and we call him Tiny, and it's ironic. But they have no irony and oftentimes no explanation for their nicknames. It's just other cultures have shitty nicknames.
Well, I'll tell you, it really does lead me into what I wanted to bellyache about. And food-related names. First of all, if you've been watching sports of late, I assume they're running these, but I think they really target the sports fan. Subway has a new item called Flatiza. Now, what this is it's pizza, only flat. What is this thing what is the flatiza that they're pushing and pushing and pushing? You got to try this. And they actually say, a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but they say, our scientists at Subway have come up with the latest great invention. It's flatiza. It's flat pizza.
First pick in the WNBA, by the way.
I don't get that.
Can I just say this? Why do we need to invent a new fucking sandwich every 8 minutes and a new flavor of iced tea and a new flavor of Dorito? Do we feel like we're out? Like, when you go to the deli and you look down the list of you go to Art's Deli or you go to Cantor's and you look down the list of sandwiches and Reuben, a corned beef, a club, a turkey, pastrami, roast beef. Do you ever go, geez, no flatiza on here?
I resent. There's like all the LA delis do that. They have Mexican items and they have Chinese items. I didn't. What? I would have gotten that.
But there's 28 sandwiches to choose from. Is that not enough?
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm now being confused by the options.
Put that ad back up there because I want to show you guys something. On the left side of the ad, it says, try the new flatiza. On the right side of the ad, classic flatiza. You can't have new and classic at the same time. It's exactly the opposite.
Yeah, it's like grandma from the old country used to make. Yeah.
It's flat pizza. What? How do they get away with this? They pass it off as though they discovered something.
Right.
I don't get it. I don't understand. But this is the one that's really under my skin of late. I've complained in the past, I believe on this very podcast and maybe some other places too, about, you know, I don't like the LOL and the YOLO and all that stuff. But of course, when you complain about that and you say, it wasn't like that in my day, well, incorrect, of course, because this nonsense all started with the lazy soul who's chipping away, carving into headstones and decided, I want to get out of here early on a Friday. All right, rest it. R.I.P. You'll get what I'm talking about. And that's what started all this nonsense.
Rick repeated the 12th grade four times using fake IDs.
Four times. This is
After high. I mean, not directly. He took a decade off, I think.
Yeah.
Then he came back.
Yeah, and it wasn't for poor grades, obviously. This was just a weird social experiment or an opportunity to hit on underaged young ladies. So anyway, so that laziness, that lazy deed of RIP, another one that occurred to me recently is this one. We have two kinds of fruit. Now, you know I like fruits. There's one called a grape, and one is called a grapefruit. And these two fruits, outside of both being produce, have absolutely nothing in common. One is little and sweet. The other one is this big orange orb with hideous, to my taste, a bitter and red mess, and they don't look anything alike. They have nothing. The tastes are not similar. One is a grape. The other is a grapefruit. And I can only assume that this was the lazy act of a jerk who was like, the boss is gone already. We got grape. What's this big orange one called? I just call it a grapefruit. Just go.
How about grape nuts having nothing to do with anything?
With either grape nor nuts nor food.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, maybe if you were drunk, you could draw a very long line to connect it to nuts. But where's the grape?
They're
not purple. They're not flavored like grape. They're not sweet. They're not anything soft. With grape.
Same ballpark. It's the flatiza. Is that they're trying to say that we've invented something, but you haven't invented.
But what is
it's Orwellian
at all? And then grapefruit. Here's what we'll do. We could just call it nuts. But instead, we're going to bring in the people who love grapes.
Let's break down flatiza or something. It's flat, right?
A pizza.
And then it's pizza.
Yep.
But do pizzas usually come in a ball?
In a dome.
That's what I said.
I know. It's just a bizarre. Here's what I'm saying. Whether it is, I've always said it's, you know, I want to be. Here's what the superpower I would like?
Mm.
I would like the ability to show up at boardroom meetings when ideas like what can Brown do for you are being pitched or flatiza or things like that and go, what the fuck? Really? Like, I want to be there for the genesis of it. Like, not when the guy thinks of flatiza or what can Brown do for you, but when it's actually spoken.
When everyone is agreeing on it.
Yeah, where that part where the guy flicks the lights on and off and says, all right, people, shut the cell phones off. Rob's got to go to the board now. He's got the floor. And he goes, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring you, and then he pulls a sheet off something, and it says either what can Brown do for you, or flatiza, or new Coke, or like whatever's behind it. But just when the world's worst ideas are unveiled, and then people embrace them. How does that work?
Cynic man, and Corolla flies in like, no, this won't work.
Right.
Nah, next. I agree.
Telling you, I was in Chicago at the affiliate when they were gonna run Loveline on the Chicago affiliate back before it got picked up by MTV. It was a syndicated late night show, and we were there making the rounds with all the affiliates, like they always talk about with Jay Leno. I have to go to the affiliates and glad hand it. And when we were done making the rounds, they said, we have a whole new campaign for the WB, and it's going nationwide. And it was always, and they said, what we need is you guys. We have all the celebrities stand in front of this big brick wall and say, it's the WB. And I know it sounds like the Howard Stern movie. And I said, and of course, me and Drew were like, it's the WB. No. WWWWB. And we had to hear it 19 times because it didn't just roll off the tongue. And I just said, do you think this is going to catch on? And they're like, we're betting on it, and we're putting a lot behind it. We're getting all the celebrities to go, it's the WWWWB. And I said, nobody is going to repeat this. We've been talking about it for 40 minutes. I still can't get it. Nobody's going to sound like all the kids and all the schoolyards are going to go, hey, I gave him the WWWWB. I said, this is never going to work. And they went, just trust us. You know, just do it. And Drew,
I think we know what we're
Drew
doing
was
here.
Practicing it, and I was saying, "No, why? What are we doing? This, it's never going to happen. No one's ever going to use it. What are you guys doing? How much money are you sinking into this campaign? Big campaign, getting everybody in on it. All the stars on the WB are having to learn the WWWWB. And I was like, "Why? What are you doing?" And
did you end up doing it?
Yes, me and Drew had to stand in front of like a brick wall, and we were brand new. I'd just begun my complaining, my era of complaint, but we were just brand new, and we just were trying to learn it. But I just kept saying, nobody's going to say this, and I was saying, like, 6 months from now, this is going to be gone, and whoever thought of it's going to be fired. What are we doing? And they're just like, learn it and do it. I don't know how it works. That's
Corolla.
What we live in.
With Dr. Drew in front of a brick wall, Dr. Drew going like, dubba, 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 like, nah, we're not doing it. That would be the commercial. That would be catchy stuff. That would be great. Also, lastly, it's been a long time since I've been in here. Since last we saw one another, I was in New York / New Jersey for the Super Bowl. Mm. And a couple days before that, the media day thing. It's, you see all the videos, people getting the crazy costumes. That's one end of the spectrum, or all the people who foolishly think, this is going to make me. I'm going to put on a silly outfit and ask one of the coaches something, and I'll ascend to the stars. That's laughable and sort of sad. At the other end of the spectrum are the curmudgeons who bellyache the entire time. Well, I don't know why I have to put up with this. You're a sports writer. Settle down, fella. You're not doing the Lord's work. You're doing that. But, they bellyache that they have to tolerate the clowns who do it. So I try to thread the needle and land in between them. And so I was going around and asking all the players and coaches if this was a must-win game before the Super Bowl.
Dave had the question of the day. This was the question.
It did. It got a lot. It actually did get a lot of play from a lot
attention.
Of other people. Yeah, like Rick Riley and people like that were yapping about it. Most of them missed the joke. But one guy who I'm certain missed the joke was a blast from the past. Who did I see there? He runs a sports network these days, a radio sports network.
Oh,
man,
no.
Talk about a personal
he sure
health.
Does.
This is the man who called me in and told me, talk about bad ideas, too, that you want to get rid of at the point of inception. This is the man who thought, hey, you know what would be a great fix to Adam Carolla? Danny Bonaducci. That's a perfect marriage.
I stand by my choice.
But so I see this guy. He always used to bellyache prior to that great decision to me about no one cares about sports. He's not a sports fan. Somehow now he runs a sports network.
Yeah.
But I saw him down on the ground. And, it's one of those things you always fantasize. Oh, what's going to happen? What heat is going to emerge there? And it was kind of like, yeah, there he is, Jack Silver, everybody. And he just kind of looked over at me. And made that sheepish kind of like grin on his face, and that was that. That's, I know it's an anticlimactic story, but it was strange to look across and see him in his his middle-aged, leather jacket thing and all that kind of stuff.
Fair, it's not like he didn't make some significant contributions to the show. Hey, Schman, how about we give the timeout? We're on in multiple time zones, Jack. Gotcha.
Oh, it was terrific.
Yeah, really changed the complexion of the show with those kinds of suggestions.
Is this the first time you've seen him since back then?
I've not set eyes on him since he called me on the telephone. Well, I didn't see him that day either when he called me on the telephone.
The fire.
Hey, you're talented as hell. You're a talented SOB. I don't understand what we're talking about then. Wait, but you're firing me though, right?
Hey, let me tell you something.
It was a lot of fun.
Sniper in the weeds.
Good to see him.
All right, bring it home.
That's it. I'm like, Jack Silver, whatever. That's water under the bridge as far as I'm concerned. We have an active problem, though. Flatiza, the person in the fruit naming factory for grape and grapefruit. Oh, excuse, hey, boss, I came up with persimmon already this week. What are the, how much are you going to put on my shoulders here? Enough's enough already. Listen, rise to the occasion. You're the security guard of fruit namers out there. You say it goes for you, you so-called Subway scientist who came up with this flatiza. Shame on all of you. What's better? You're the creeps of the week. Taste the blaster. I'm going to go home.
Stamps.com, baby. Post office always crowded now. Tax season. Look out, world. Man, that place is a madhouse. You don't need to enter that clown car. Stamps.com. You can do it all. You can do it all from your desk. You can buy and print official U.S. postage. Any letter, package, do it right from your own computer. Simple and easy, and just hand it to your mail character. I'm thinking about comic books too much. Special offer. Mail carrier, you special offer. Use my name, Adam. No risk trial. $110 bonus offer. Includes a digital scale up to $55. Free postage. Go to stamps.com. Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone, top of the homepage. Type in Adam. That is stamps.com. Promo code Adam. All right, let's do a little news, Allison Rosen.
Okay.
The news with Allison Rosen.
She'll read some news from her iPad. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. It's Allison. Allison. And when it's time to wrap it up, she'll sign it off with zip it cut. It's Allison. Allison.
I should tell you all, me and Greg Gutfeld, May 13th, Caroline's doing a little book launch party over there. And then us in San Francisco. We all love San Francisco. That's May 18th, Palace of Fine Arts. So we'll be bringing the show live there, seeing how the fudge, boy, something happened to my mouth. See how the fudge is packed. And Richmond, Virginia, me doing a little stand-up in May. Go to amcroll.com and find out where we're going to be and all that kind of stuff around town. Sorry.
And Bald Brian's going to be on the Dave Damashek football program in the next few days or weeks here.
We look forward
about
to that
the book. Too.
Long time coming.
All right, what do we got? Okay.
Well, here's a story that you know about, but there's been a lot of coverage of Robert Kraft calling into Rich Eisen's podcast to thank you for the raised goalposts. Lots of headlines about it. And Kraft said, "We always like to speak with influential opinion makers who can change things that important with the culture of America." Which you'd almost think was sarcastic, but no, he was being totally serious. Right?
Well, he doesn't have a sense of humor, so he means it, but he didn't mean it. I mean, he's not... No, see, there's a third realm that we don't live in. But you have to get to a certain bracket to live in this realm. Or you have to be a representative. You have to be in politics, essentially. And owning a team as being a politician, you know, owning a
news
outfit.
Is that the realm
of
insincerity?
It's a realm of, we have two things. We have sincere compliment, and then we have ironic compliment. But there's a third one, which is the one that sounds ironic to us, and it should be, but they mean it, but their press, whatever, wrote it for them, and then they say it, and it keeps them in everyone's good graces, and they don't come from a place where they have irony. So they don't understand that it sounds, you know, tongue-in-cheeky when it's
patronizing
not.
The patrons.
That's right.
Is what it really
by
is.
The patrons.
Hey, you know, we couldn't have done it without the best fans in the world.
Right,
yeah,
right.
I'm sure you mean that.
I'll take it.
About 100 people were arrested and at least 44 taken to the hospital during a weekend college party in Southern California that devolved into a rock and bottle throwing melee, said authorities. The violence broke out in Isla Vista around 9:30 Saturday.
Oh, man. Santa Barbara, man.
During the annual spring break party known as Deltopia.
Check. Were you there when we got our van attacked?
No, I was not. I've heard the tale many times, but it you guys didn't they rock your van like in what was it? Clear and Present Danger?
Yes.
Harrison Ford being attacked by the locals as he went through in his SUV.
We Isla Vista, they used to close it down. By the way, no better party place to go for on Halloween than Isla Vista. They'd close all the streets off. Everyone would get shit-faced and just go walk around. I met my girlfriend there a million years ago. But we used to do man show retreats. And the Man Show writer retreats were there to get the producers to pay us to go somewhere and, you know, spitball ideas. But all we would do is get drunk and high and do nothing. And, you know, Jeff Ross would go get a massage and Cousin Sal would come in the room and then fart while she was literally with the masseuse. And then Jeff would get very angry and sincere. But this woman has, she has children. This is how she makes a living. And you come in here and you fart, you know, like it turned into nothing all the time. So what happened was we had the Man Show retreat planned. And they said, we're going to do it on Saturday the 23rd. And I said, I can't. Me and Dr. Drew are slated to play the University of Santa Barbara. We would tour and play these colleges. And they said, I think it was Daniel Kellison said, well, why don't we just do it in Santa Barbara? We'll all drive out. We'll do, I don't know, season two or something of the Man Show. We'll drive out. You and Drew go do the show, or like we'll go out on a Friday. We'll spitball ideas on a Friday night, and then Saturday you go do the show, and we'll come out to the show. Big auditorium. All I remember is big wooden vaulted ceilings and stuff. I don't know, maybe like 3,000 seater, 2,500 seater, whatever it was. And then after the show, we'll go party. Well, after the show, Daniel said, hey, let's go down to Fraternity Row. I know the Delts are throwing a party, and they've invited us. And I remember the Man Show was in full swing at this point, you know. So, of course, me and Jimmy were like, I don't know if we want to go to a fraternity party, like in the middle of Fraternity Row, because we're the Man Show, and it's pretty popular amongst the fraternity folks. And plus, I'm on MTV at this point, too, which was nothing but college.
Were you kids in a relationship at this point, or...?
No, I wasn't. But you're not going to get laid at a fraternity party anyway. But I just thought, fuck it. So we just went to this frat house. And me and Jimmy just walked into this frat house with the rest of the man, Cousin Sal and Daniel, and everyone was drinking beers and whatever. And then at some point, it was like buzz started going around the party. Hey, Man Show guy's here. MTV guy. Man Show, MTV. Win Ben Stein's money guy. And everyone went, what? Who the fuck? And then it all went around like, the Man Show guy's here. The Man Show. And then the place started, and we had to retreat. We had to head to the van, like, in a hurry because we're getting mobbed. And we jumped in the van. And for some fucking reason, Cousin Sal was driving, I think, but he really can't, he can't fucking drive. He picked me and Jimmy up from the airport a million years ago. We're staying with him at his house in Long Island. He couldn't find his way back to his home, and he lived there. It'd be like you picking up someone at LAX and growing up in Glendale and not being able to find your way back. From that, literally couldn't find his way back.
But wait, couldn't Dave not find Permanentes in Pittsburgh?
That's true, and that's a made-up story that has been perpetuated.
Either way, that's what we hear. But either way, he gets behind the wheel of like the Extendo van. The 12 guys all pile into the van, and I'm in the van, and they're like rocking the van. Well, they've all taken to the streets now, and they're rocking. They're pulling the windshield wiper off, and I'm saying to Sal, hit it, man. And he's like, there's a wall of dudes in front of me. And I said, start going, and they shall clear or not. Either way, they're standing, and they were rocking the van back and forth. So, yeah, Isla Vista, which is right, that's the town. That is UC Santa Barbara. They like to get their party on over there.
Yeah. When did that become the party, though? I mean, it's an old phenomenon now. You win the title, and then over the ensuing hours, let's go and destroy police cars? I understand that there's this reflected power that I'm above the law. My team has won, therefore I can do as I want. But it is a bizarre, you know, it doesn't associate. How does it associate with euphoria at all? You have to understand, you feel empowered. Yeah, but so what? Why would you want to flip over a car?
You just feel drunk and somebody pushes back against the man, and next thing you know, you're caught up. You're pushing our van. It's nothing. You're doing a math that doesn't exist.
Mm. Yeah, you see. So in this situation, you see Santa Barbara police officer was hit in the face with a backpack filled with alcohol bottles, and then some members of the crowd of 15,000 began throwing rocks, bricks, and bottles at officers, lighting fires and damaging law enforcement vehicles. Authorities used tear gas, pepper spray, and foam projectiles to disperse the surging crowd. What are foam projectiles?
They're like rubber bullets, I guess, or a version of a
It sounds so much more Nerf than I think it really is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Five officers were injured. One officer was hit in the face with a brick.
I would like to go back in time, like 150 years in law enforcement, and go, we are going to have about 35 different ways of non-lethal crowd enforcement, whatever. And I'm sure if you're talking to the sheriff of a Western town, he's like, how about just taking out your six-shooter and waving it over your head once? Yeah, that's not going to slow down. There's going to be a new breed of drunken moron that even holding a pistol up and firing two shots in the air is not going to get them to do shit. That's not going to stop them from encroaching on you. It's not going to stop them from taking their shirt off and swinging around and screaming, you're not the boss of me. Like,
that's so true.
Why do we need 15 forms of non-lethal, you know, like we have tasers, we have pepper spray, we have rubber bullets, we have foam bullets, we have 15 different tasers. Like, we need all these different forms of non-lethal. Whatever happened to just the threat of the lethal? Like, it used to be, if you wanted a crowd to break up, fire a fucking gunshot in the air and you get everyone's attention. Everyone is so fucking narcissistic and bold and entitled now. The fact that the guy has a Glock on his hip, not nearly enough to slow them down. You're not the boss of me, man. Fuck that shit. That's right, I'm barefoot and I'm riding a skateboard that's 9 foot long. What the fuck are you going to do about it, man? It's like, you have a gun. Did you ever think that we would fuck with guys with guns to this extent that we would need 30 different forms of non-lethal bullets and whatever to deal with it? Like, I would like to explain that to, forget about a founding father, just an old West, you know, Sam Elliott's great-grandfather.
Think about, you know, when you discipline your kids, you know, one of the threats is to take something away, but a little Jean-Claude Van Damme-ishek doesn't respond to those threats. Hey, all right, hey, listen, I'm going to take away your car. I'm going to take away your favorite little car toy there. Like, okay, that must be the cop. I'm going to shoot you if you don't listen to me. Like, no, you're not. You're not going to do that. Like, what? Where do I go from here? What am I supposed to do?
And also,
this sort of insolence.
By the way, cops, it's weird, the duality of being a cop, because on one hand, you can have guys like charging you with pitchforks and you can't use lethal force. You have to use a taser or something. But on the other hand, if you roll up on a Honda that you think looks like another Honda that may have a rogue cop in it, you can fill it as full as many bullets as you like without ever asking for any ID or anything at all. And you'll never get fired from the police force. I'm just saying, aren't there enough instances of cops shooting people for no reason to slow your encroachment down?
That's the only time you're allowed to. It's only if there's for no reason.
It's weird, yeah. Like, once you realize there's a reason to be shot, then everyone's emboldened. I just feel like, when did the gun and the warning shot become not enough for you not to chuck the bottle? There's a guy holding a gun, and you're chucking a bottle at him.
It's so true.
Does that seem like a good idea?
You're right, too, that to me, at least, in a perverse way, that's sort of the best thing that ever happened to the police force is when somebody gets shot and it wasn't justified because, scaredy cats like me already fearful of authority. Now it's like, well, they might shoot me if something goes wrong here. I'm not going to say a peep here. Where do people then double down on the outrageous responses to cops?
I'm just saying, cop, neighbor, or none. If somebody has a Glock with a 13-round clip in it and you're holding like a snow globe, would you come at them going, oh, boy, I'm going to bust him across the fucking forehead with this shit? It just doesn't make sense, does it? And then you start looking around on the ground for other shit to throw at him, but he has this thing strapped to his side that
can
scenario, kill you?
One of the options might be that it's a nun with the gun.
Could be a nun. You pick the life form with the Glock, and I'll tell you the person that I'm not chucking the 2-liter Pepsi bottle at.
Do you think, a side note, anyone, as a difference between movie reality and reality, a lot of people, when they have a gun pointed at them in movies, challenge the person to, and they say, do it. Do it. Go ahead. Do it. Has anyone in real life ever said, do it? Go ahead. You don't have the guts. Has anyone ever given that speech?
They do the one every once in a while where they get the person in a headlock. And they're holding the gun to the person's head, and then the guy's yelling at his partner or his wife or his whatever. Yeah. Shoot!
Take the shot!
Take the shot! If that were Lynette holding the gun, I'd do an interesting thing. I'd go, take the shot, but aim at me! I know you'll fuck this up. But wait a minute, now I've reversed. Shit! Now I make it hit. Fuck, now I'm screwed. I don't know what to do, if I put a curse on myself or not. All right, let's bring it home,
baby
girl.
That's the news. I'm Allison Rosen, Zipit Cunt.
That was the news with Allison Rosen.
No, the power move is when they shoot their own guy, but they shoot him in the thigh.
Yeah, or they the bullet passes through his shoulder.
Yeah, they just pop him in the thigh, and the other guy will drop him for some reason, and then pow, pow, pow.
And that was Dave Damashek back in 2014 thanking Adam for what we have been known to call the Corolla rule, at least on the streets.
He changed the NFL forever, and nobody ever talks about it.
Yeah, it's incredible. All right, that'll do for part one of today's show. Stick around. Part two coming up next.